Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gau Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
Tonight would be a great night to head over to Liberty Kitchen in the Heights or Liberty Kitchen and Oysterette on San Felipe near the Galleria. You'll find award-winning chefs at both of these restaurants. We've had them up in studio, including Travis Lenick, Lance Fagan, up here as well, serving up the best in seafood and meats. Now, I love the raw bar at Liberty Kitchen and Oysterette, plus the smoked salmon at Liberty Kitchen in the Heights. The Liberty Kitchen in the Heights location, a little bit more of the Austin feel. They just opened another place up in Austin, by the way, if you're up in Austin. Fresh fish, oysters, gumbo, right on down to amazing steaks and burgers. They serve breakfast on the weekends. Take it from me for an amazing dining experience. Liberty Kitchen and Liberty Kitchen and Oysterette. LibertyKitchen.com, LibertyKitchenOysterette.com. My good friend Carl Eves, involved with the HFA and a huge soccer fan, and it might be soon that we will get Travis Lenick and more of that great Liberty Kitchen food up here in studio. Oh, we love it. All right, right now I'm in it's the gift of giving. A quick reminder here, the Houston Dash, Carly Lloyd and Company, Morgan Bryan, Megan Klingenberg, huge game on Friday night here in Houston. It is a nationally broadcasted game. It will be at BBVA Compass Stadium. Right now, to the seventh caller, I got a pair of tickets to see the Houston Dash, the Seattle Reign come in with Megan Rapinoe and Hope Solo. But more importantly, or equally as important, they come in with the best midfield in the NWSL, in my opinion. Keelan Winters, Jess Fishlock, and Kim Little. This is going to be a midfield battle with Lloyd Bryan against them. It's a game you don't want to miss. Dash, Seattle Reign. What did I say? Seventh caller? Did I say seventh, Michael? Yeah, I think I said seventh caller, right?
Yep.
All right, seventh caller, you get the tickets to the Houston Dash this Friday night. So I take you back to the Premier League. And there was a number of things that happened. Again, it's early. It's only the second week. And the lack of activity in the transfer market from Chelsea is an issue. An ego that seems more out of control than ever with Jose Mourinho. So trouble could be a brewing. Mourinho made the team doctor, Eva Carneiro, the most talked about female in world football after a sideline bust up for going on the field to quickly attend to Eden Hazard at a critical moment in the match, along with the physio. They call it a physio, John Fearn. You're not seeing her on the bench. We'll see what the future holds for her. I would say an MLS team right now, go scoop her up and make her your team doctor. She's obviously a talented doctor. Mourinho said, quote, I wasn't happy with my medical staff because even if you are a medical doctor or secretary on the bench, you have to understand the game. That's what Jose Mourinho said. Well, did he only realize now that his medical staff didn't understand the game? It seemed to have worked for many years prior. Now, some who have drank the blue Kool-Aid will say this is purely Mourinho using the media to deflect. He's amazing. To them, I say, grab a pint, sing a Chelsea song, and stay in your lack of reality. There are challenges here right now. Challenges that at times can be hidden by the talent of Eden Hazard. But if you did not see the writing on the wall with the captain, John Terry, whose longtime commitment to the team on the field can't be disputed. Can't say I'm a fan of his off the field. But athletically, Terry's in a struggle. Yes, you can build a deep defending team around John Terry with the comfort of other defenders off his shoulder. But when you attack with vigor and you get opened up and you begin to open up against teams, which it almost seems like Chelsea wants to do more of that. And they did some of that last year. But it seems like Mourinho might be conflicted in that. He will never mention that, I don't think. But I think he's conflicted because he's been pushed a little bit when it comes to the aesthetics of his football and the way he coaches. But John Terry can be exposed and has been exposed already this year. Now, this is a big piece with Terry because he's a locker room galvanizer. And he's no doubt at the end. And there's never an easy way out with a star player. It never ends easily unless there are concessions. And those concessions generally have to come from the player, or they're sold earlier before they begin to decline physically and value is gained from them. Think Terry's a scapegoat? Remember, Jose Mourinho left Real Madrid with few friends or supporters. A lot different than Carlo Ancelotti. The former Scottish international Graham Souness, the Liverpool great, believes Mourinho is sending a message to Roman Abramovich that he needs a defender. They're still trying to sign Everton's John Stones. They have signed a left back, Augsburg's Baba Rahman. But Azpilicueta, Sabaleta. Oh. Liverpool beat Bournemouth, but you know what? They're going to play Arsenal in their next match, and we're going to find out who's an imposter. Stand up. Liverpool's got 2 wins. I'm not sure how impressive they've been. They're 6 very important points. Christian Benteke scored the lone goal against Bournemouth, who that was a tough one for them to swallow. Controversial offside. Spurs had a 2-0 lead against Stoke and ended up in a 2-2 draw. Stoke comeback started by Stephen Ireland. He helped to turn it around. And Stoke's going to get Shaqiri in the future plying his trade. Stoke in the last 35 minutes were good. Leicester 2-1 over West Ham. 2 in a row for Claudio Ranieri. Arsenal 2-1 over Crystal Palace. Everton 3-0 over Southampton. Norwich 3-1 over Sunderland. So there you have it. All right, we'll take another break. We'll remind you that we thank all our great supporters on this show. Liberty Kitchen, 7-Up, Bud Light, Bayern Munich, Gaspit Law Firm, Gorgeous Gale, Danish Inspirations Contemporary Furniture, Amigo Energy. We thank Amigo Energy, and we remind you to get over to AmigoEnergy.com/Soccer Matters. Look up Nights Free. That's AmigoEnergy.com/Soccer Matters. Look up Nights Free. It's a cool way to enjoy Texas summer nights. Our thanks as well to Amigo Energy. All right, we'll take a break. Going to break right now. 5th caller, you get a pair of tickets to see Carly Lloyd, Megan Klingenberg, Morgan Bryan, the Houston Dash, Seattle Rain this Friday night. Looking forward to that one. I'm doing the call on a national broadcast along with Cat Whitehill, former U.S. player. So we're going to have some fun down there Friday night. Houston Dash, Seattle Rain right now. 4th caller, you get a pair of tickets. We'll take a break. We got more to come with Tony Miola and Craig Burley.
Caller 5, actually.
Well, my spirit groans to see the afterlife. I'm so broken and small.
ESPN 97.5.
All right, welcome back to ESPN 97.5. This is Soccer Matters. We always appreciate you listening in and calling in. Great opportunity here to catch up with former U.S. national team star goalkeeper Tony Miola, who, Tony, you have crossed the dark side now. You have joined us on radio and TV.
Yeah, welcome, I guess. Now, you know what? It's all good. It's all new to me. The radio I've been doing a little bit longer, obviously, than the television. I still have no idea what the hell I'm doing, Glenn, but I'm rolling with it. That's all.
Well, you're rolling well with it because I've heard a lot of your stuff. Tony is doing a show on Sirius FC, Channel 85. It's called Counterattack. It's weekly 5 to 7 p.m. Give it a listen. It's good stuff. And you've also been breaking games down as an analyst on live games. Has that made you look at the game maybe a little bit differently?
Well, you know, as I said, I'm still trying to learn that whole profession, and I don't know how deep into it I am. I will tell you this. I don't really have someone asked me earlier today, I was doing an interview, what kind of style I have. I said, I don't know that I've been in it long enough to have a style, but I do look at it from a coaching perspective, and I think that's really the only way that I can describe it best. As I look at it, hey, there's tactics going on. Coaches made decisions. These are things that they're looking at, and of course, you know better than I, always trying to maybe give you one thing throughout the game, one theme throughout the game that maybe the viewer is not seeing. But I will say this, and you, again, you've been around this thing a long time, and I have as well. Our viewers and our listeners are pretty smart people these days. You know, that you can't talk down your, as they say in the business, don't dumb it down, right? They're pretty astute, so you're kind of just following along. But I'm enjoying it. It keeps me close to the game. And again, I love the coaching sort of part of it, and that's how I approach it.
You know, that's refreshing that you say that the education level of the fan here now, you are absolutely 100% correct. And anybody who denies that is in an illusion. And I think sometimes even coaches, when dealing with the media here in MLS, as MLS has grown and the healthy pressure has grown, I think some have some struggles with that at times.
Yeah, and again, you know, you never know till you walk a mile in someone else's shoes. But I like the fact when they come on, you know, when we have, you know, we had Peter Vermes, for example, on just the other day, and people who know the history know that I've known Peter for a while. I feel like when I'm talking to him or with Dominic Kinnear, who you guys know down there in Houston really well, I mean, when talking to guys like that, I feel like we're just kind of hanging out. You know, we ran into each other, you know, at a bar or in an airport or on the street, and we start talking about the game, you know, as if we were still playing. And I love the fact that they will call you out, right, if you make a mistake, and mistakes happen sometimes. But I love the fact that we're talking real soccer, you know, and talking. And I think listeners and viewers, Glenn, like it more than anybody, you know, and the ones that, because I'm a believer, just like when you're playing, you bring a young kid who's talented up, who wants to learn the game. I think you put them in a high level training, and if they're good enough, they will adjust. I think the same thing with fans. If you're new to the game, right, if you don't, again, use that term, dumb it down, I think they will catch up really quickly and learn to enjoy the game even more. So That's kind of the approach, but it's been an awful lot of fun, you know, sort of being this close to the game on this end of it, and I've learned a lot.
Yeah, and it's a critical time in the sport for television and radio, because we've seen its growth. I mean, we've seen its growth from your days in MLS, and there's networks competing for rights, and it all becomes a great sort of synergy that reminds us that, you know, everybody who's either hosting a radio show or calling games on television have a major responsibility.
Yeah, and no doubt. I was talking with our good friend Taylor Twellman the other day before the Sunday matchup that he had, and we were coming on right on Fox right after his game on ESPN, and we were talking about, he was asking me how I like it also. I will tell you this, I have a newfound respect for it. The research that goes into it, the execution, the people in the truck, the people that work behind the scenes. And I never knew, when you play, right, you don't know any of this stuff goes on, and you don't know how difficult it is, but it's not easy. And I will say I'm learning along the way, and I've been, I think you're probably the only person in America I haven't worked with.
We need to get that one checked off.
Yeah,
that would be a lot of fun. He's Tony Miola, former U.S. Star goalkeeper for the U.S. national team. Also has a show on Sirius called Counterattack, and you'll also be seeing him calling games as an analyst throughout matches on Fox Sports. All right, so today I know you watched and saw the Manchester United Bruges game. A big day for Memphis Depay, who gets sort of put out on the left a little bit more like he's naturally used to, and he cuts inside, scores two goals. A big day for him, a big day for Manchester United.
Yeah, no doubt. And this is a sort of a confusing Manchester United team over the last 12 months. And people struggle a little bit with Louis van Gaal and what his theory is. And I've come to grips with Man United. And this is not – I'm not a Man United fan. I didn't grow up – I enjoy just watching good games. And it's a team that I just think is going to grind out results. And the one thing I have learned in doing all this, Man United fans are never happy, right? But they're happy when you get results. They want better play. There's no doubt about it. I think the expectation was that there would be better play under Louis van Gaal. There would be more fluid stuff in games. We're not seeing that, but they are finding a way. You mentioned Memphis Depay. I think we saw glimpses today. Of course, it's a team in Bruges that, at Old Trafford, we would have expected Manchester United to win. But with this team, maybe we shouldn't expect, because we have seen some games where it hasn't gone well. But so far this season, two games in the Premier League, full complement of 6 points. You've got the game today. Now, the last goal, I was joking earlier that it was sort of in Sir Alex Ferguson stoppage time, right? The referee had his whistle in his mouth, and Fellaini gets an all-important goal that was assisted by Depay, but it's a Bruges team that I think they should get by. But there's some positives. I like Romero. For me, has stuck out over the three games so far. Very, very confident. Very good with distribution with his feet. Not unusual. Januzaj had two spectacular games. He gets the goal on the weekend. He's really growing into his own a little bit. I think needs to maybe get a little bit stronger physically, but I think one of the most important aspects has been defensively for this team. Chris Smalling was a question mark. They've been looking for center backs. I mean, how long have we heard Hummels coming from Dortmund? It eventually didn't happen, but we heard it seemed like for 2 or 3 years. Luke Shaw looks a little fitter this year. I think Darmian, I saw Kondreva playing with Lazio on my computer, and I was watching Darmian play on the television. I'm going back to the World Cup last year and watching those guys. I think he's a massive pickup, and I think Schneiderlin along the way is going to become one of the more steady players for Man United. You know, the question mark with Wayne Rooney, this guy, you know, he knows how to score goals. There's no doubt. It just hasn't clicked so far for him, Glenn.
Tony Niola joining us here on ESPN 97.5. Let's go back to Sergio Romero, because I'm interested in your thoughts on him as a goalkeeper. I mean, obviously, I think when you get stuck in goal for Manchester United, you better get through the first game, two games, three games, or, you know, could be the kiss of death for you. I guess he's settled in, hasn't he?
Yeah, he certainly has. And you go to De Gea and that whole situation right now, and I think Manchester United fans maybe learned a little bit. So I started my radio show 3 years ago when De Gea was just coming into the team. And, boy, if you'd have listened to those fans after, 6 weeks, they couldn't wait to get rid of David De Gea. And I would always say, you know, this guy, 21 years old, you got to give him a little bit of time. Now, Romero's was 28 or 29 years old at the time. He's got some experience at Monaco, at Sampdoria. Obviously, in Argentina, he's got Copa America under his belt. He's got a World Cup final under his belt. This is a guy that comes with experience. He doesn't get rattled very much in a position. I don't care how much experience you have, that if he did get rattled, Glenn, you couldn't really blame him, right? You get to the beginning of the season, you're likely looking at being the backup. This whole situation happens with De Gea. Louis van Gaal decides not to play him on opening weekend, and all of a sudden you're thrown in to the Premiership with Manchester United when you probably mentally, as much as you wanted to play, you probably weren't focused on being the starter. Now it looks like he's settling in. The De Gea thing is getting closer. It seems like I think it's kind of a crazy situation nonetheless, but he might be the guy to be Manchester United's goalkeeper the entire season.
Tony Miola joining us. We're going over a few things here when it comes to Manchester United, but let's switch gears to some of the Premier League games, and obviously all the attention is on Jose Mourinho and John Terry, but let's switch it in the other direction to Manchester City, and it certainly seems that Vincent Kompany and Yaya Toure seem a little bit more motivated this year. I know it's early. I know you can't make too many judgments here too quickly, but those two last year were both criticized, both so far look very engaged and very mentally up for it.
Yeah, they look refreshed, don't they? They look like rested men, and of course they had a preseason that didn't go very well for them. You mentioned they were criticized last year. The one guy who on this team that really didn't get criticized all year was Aguero, because he just continued to score goals. I guess I could throw David Silva into this conversation, but I think more importantly, they're starting to see the Fernandinho that they thought they were going to get. They bring Raheem Sterling. For me, the interesting part with Raheem Sterling will be, how does he fit in? If you go back to Manchester City the last 2 years, how many games have you watched where they have a team pinned in, it seems like, in their final 30 yards of the field, and Man City's attacking final third, and they're just knocking the ball around the box. And when it eliminates space behind and Sterling can't run, I think that's the part he's going to have to figure out. He's a great addition to the team. I hate the saga that he went through to get there with his agent and all the talk and everything. That's the part that I think, one, will eventually change his game a little bit and for the good of the English national team as well. But I think that's the part he's going to struggle with the most. When the game's not wide open and you can't run wild and have acres of space to run in behind people, because – you know, this Man City team is absolutely loaded, and it doesn't matter where you look on the field. They got guys that can play. I still think David Silva is one of the best players in the Premier League. For as much credit as he does get, I still think he's one of the more underrated players in a lot of ways. But Yaya Toure, when he plays with that motivation, he and Fernandinho, this new Fernandinho that we're seeing, this box-to-box guy, I think make up, if they're going to play in this 4-2-3-1, probably the best defensive midfield maybe that we've seen for a long time in the Premiership.
Boy, what a foil David Silva is, too, for Sergio Aguero. What fascinates me about him, Tony, is this is a guy that can pick a ball up in a congested penalty area, be besieged by three or four defenders, and still consistently, pretty consistently, create chances for himself, a la the goal he scored against Chelsea.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the beauty of him. If you go back and watch his highlight tapes over the last 2 years, there's more of those types of goals, right? And great strikers. He's got that low center of gravity. He's hard to bump off the ball. Great strikers do it in different ways. On the other side of things, you know, you got Diego Costa, who's a guy who has a nose for goal, but does it in a different way, right? And you've got strikers around the world. Luis Suarez does it maybe in a little bit more of a fashion, like an Aguero with that low center of gravity. But again, he's a little bit more in open spaces sometimes. So, you know, the guys like these guys just have a knack for goal. You know, they just have a knack for knowing. I mean, you mentioned that Aguero, he knew exactly where he was this weekend. He knew exactly how he had to turn the face goal. He knew that he wasn't, when the ball finally settled at his left foot, he wasn't going to have a heck of a lot of time or a heck of a lot of space, but that's just an instinct, you know, and the great ones have it, and that's why we consider them great.
That awareness just out of this world. You almost say to yourself, you know, did I just see that? It's just
yeah,
like he's got eyes in the back of his head. It's absolutely spectacular. Let's switch gears to Major League Soccer a little bit. How about Seattle? All these moves they make, Valdez, they get the big center back from Panama, and then, of course, they get back Obafemi Martins, and all of a sudden they get a win.
Yeah, look, a team that was desperate for a win, weren't they? And you mentioned Valdez, and I called the Panama game, and I watched, obviously, like most did, the entire Gold Cup. I was surprised people weren't lining up at the door for Roman Torres. I think I even said it in the telecast. And, you know, Seattle needed a center back. You know, they had Brad Evans back there who did a formidable job, but they needed something more out of it, and they needed to find a way to solidify things. I think he's a beast. I think he's going to be what eventually will be considered maybe the pickup that changes it. Because there were bleeding goals a little bit, especially, you know, Oba wasn't there and Clint missed games. And the center midfielder, Osvaldo, in the middle of the field.
Alonso,
in the middle of the field. You know, when you miss guys like that, you need to lock things down defensively. And they were struggling there, and they were struggling to get it done, but boy, they came out. I'm sure Seattle fans were extremely happy with the way it went this weekend, and maybe in a lot of ways sort of took a deep breath and a sigh of relief a little bit that, hey, this is sort of the team we kind of knew. You know, they had those, you know, Glenn, it's really difficult. We're seeing it in the league with this, you know, we're calling it Major League Soccer MLS 2.0, right, with the way the yep. league is now. You know, they had the Nagels of the world and Roses and sort of those ancillary type guys. They got the young kid Roldan who plays. And so they had all those pieces, but they're not guys to do it 90 minutes for 34 games. You need they need those other guys. They're built around that. And, you know, now they got to wait for Clint Dempsey, but I think Marshall and Torres in the back are going to be a pretty difficult pair. A lot of muscle in the back. Torres offers some speed. So I'm happy for Ziggy because it was some tough times for sure.
Tony, is there a danger to the stretch now with the accumulation of these higher-end quality players that L.A., Seattle, New York have been able to acquire when it's in relation to the Dallases of the world, the Houstons of the world, the San Jose's of the world? Is there a danger to this, or is this just good bar raising?
Well, there would be a danger if they were all at the top, right? Because you've got counterexamples. You got a Red Bull, right, who's now doing it in a different way. You got a DC United who's leading the Eastern Conference, who's done it in a different way. You got Columbus Crew, who's sort of, again, one of those teams that's done it differently. In the Western Conference, you can look at Sporting Kansas City, right, and look at their example. And I think at the moment, Glenn, they're still, as far as points per game go, they're still the highest in the league. They've got a bunch of games in hand, four on the LA Galaxy, who are 3 points ahead of them. You know, so there's different ways to do it. Dallas is of the world. You know, we look at some of the, you know, that the Hunt Sports Group down there. They've obviously been in the league a long time. They know it a different way. And for some of them, it's going to be difficult. I think what it eventually will do is raise the bar for everybody. And obviously that makes our league a little bit better. You also have issues with doing it, right? You look at NYCFC and how they've comprised their team, and we still have to see if that's going to work. You look at Orlando in a lot of ways and what they're trying to do, but they had a better base than NYCFC did, you know, coming into this thing, obviously being a team from the USL. And so there's no one formula anymore, is it? It used to be when we started this thing, everyone was kind of on the same formula. I know we have a salary cap. I know we have restrictions still. Those have loosened up a little bit, and now people have to make real decisions. What's going to happen in Chicago? Is Philly, with their group of talented players, going to be able to get over the top with, you know, two or three signings 1 year and make a run? You know, Chicago, I mentioned them, five out of the last 6 years not going to be in the playoffs. You know, is Colorado in danger of being left behind? So there are question marks, but there are also answers as well, and I mentioned some of those. So real interesting. I think, Glenn, what it does overall, it puts people under pressure. It puts the decision makers, a technical director, a sporting director. Every move is prudent, whether you're spending $6 million on a guy to make a difference or whether you're bringing a guy in for, you know, $250,000 that you think is going to make a difference and maybe never sees the field if you're that kind of spending team. So it puts guys under pressure, keeps guys on their toes, and you know, you're going to earn your paycheck from here moving forward in Major League Soccer.
Listen, the healthy pressure is a wonderful thing, and we've heard through for many, many years people saying this is an element that's lacking here in the United States, that there isn't healthy pressure, and we're finally beginning to see, it's still not there, but in a lot of markets, whether it's media, TV, written press, radio, all of this, yourself out there with opinions and different people, it's all great for the game. I mean, if this stuff isn't happening, you can go play in your backyard with nobody watching. I mean, that's the thing that I always say. It's like,
yeah,
you know what? Yep. So what if fans are a little off kilter? This is the way it works in the United States. And if they're not talking about you, then there's something wrong with your product.
Well, the biggest example is with our national team, right? And I had the chance to sit with Jurgen Klinsmann just prior to the third place game, and we chatted for about 45 minutes, and he said it himself. I asked him about the criticism, you know, does it get to you? He said, no, it doesn't get to me. Because, you know, if we want to be a soccer nation, right, you're going to criticize every move, right? Because this is what they do around the world. So you mentioned it. If we're not talking about this stuff, we're not getting to the point where we all want to be.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great question. And you know what? You could say whatever you want about Jurgen Klinsmann. I'm not talking about you, but anybody who's thinking about him, he has stirred the pot in a positive way, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's given us things to think about, right, and things to debate, things to argue, and that's again, so we're getting closer, right, to where we all want to be is becoming a soccer nation for sure.
Tony, I really enjoyed the conversation. Let's do it again. Let me just remind everybody where they can listen to Tony. It's on Sirius XM FC, Channel 85. It's Counterattack, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, weekdays. Catch Tony. Tony, as always, thank you for coming on the show. Enjoyed it. Let's do it again real soon.
Anytime. Thank you, my friend.
All right. That's Tony Meola. Good conversation with him on a variety of topics. I like it. I like seeing all these ex-players getting into it with real opinion. We'll take a break here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. A lot more to go on this show.
ESPN 97.5. Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gao Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
Tonight we ended in big style. Craig Burley, former Scottish international, played in Scotland, played in England, also is a part of ESPN FC. He joins us now. We're going to talk some Premier League with him. Craig, how are you?
Good evening, Glenn. I'm good. I'm good. Enjoying the Connecticut summer still, while it lasts.
Yeah, gorgeous part of the country up there where you live. And in England right now, we got a lot of interesting things going on here. And I guess Jose Mourinho's trumping everything in the news. So let's just kind of start off with this whole thing with John Terry being pulled off, them getting thrashed by Manchester City. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, they absolutely deserve to get beaten the way they did. Glenn, City were by far the better side. I mean, you've got to love watching Sergio Aguero if you're a soccer fan. He's a little magician on the ball, and he really destroyed that back four. A back four that, you mentioned John Terry, it's a back four that was rock solid domestically last season, not so much in Europe, but it has been far from that, Glenn, both in pre-season at the start. Ivanovic is normally consistent, has been poor, as for the Quetta, the left-back hasn't been himself, and John Terry has looked like it's finally started to catch up on him. Of course, that was the case a couple of years ago, and then all of a sudden he found some extra bounce in his legs, and, well, at the start of the season, it doesn't look like that bounce is there, and Mourinho took him off. Of course, he wasn't the only one to have a bad game, but it was a bit of a statement, as you know, when you take your skipper off at halftime.
Yeah, so let me go to this point, and I don't know how valid this may be. Jose Mourinho gets a lot of criticism for defending deeper, and do you think that might get to him sometimes, and he's tempted to now to try and play a little bit more open football, which obviously would be a negative for John Terry because he would be exposed a little bit more?
I think publicly he would say no because that's his image, Jose Mourinho. But I think privately he irks and sort of smarts at the criticism that comes in terms of how his style is perceived. Now, I don't always buy into that because actually the first half of last season, Chelsea played some smashing football. It wasn't so much the second half where they sort of sat in and were a little bit more dogged, but certainly, if they are going to play a higher tempo game, further up the field, trying to squeeze the opponents, then that is not going to suit a centre-half in his mid-30s. That's for sure. And I think that is one of the reasons why Chelsea are pursuing aggressively the young centre-half at Everton, John Stones. I believe there's another bid going in today, around $50 million. So they're pursuing other people in that position, and it'll be interesting to see if one they do pull off, the transfer for John Stones. And secondly, if they don't, can this back four operate in the manner in which it was successful last season?
He's Craig Burley joining us here. ESPN FC, you can catch him all during the week. Craig, I know the conversation gets moved towards Mourinho, but, boy, Manchester City, I want to take you back to Aguero. Is outside of Lionel Messi, is there another guy in the world that when besieged by three or four defenders – can consistently create chances like him?
Well, I think I'm a big Well, obviously, you've got Ronaldo, but I'm a huge fan of Luis Suarez as well, Glenn. Yeah.
There's one.
Us Scotsmen, you know, we're perceived to be tight, and I would pay money to go and watch one or two of these players because I like to see people that get bums off seats. And if you're talking about the Messis and the Agueros and the Neymars and the Suarez and Ronaldos, these guys excite the soccer fan. And I'm pleased to see Aguero fit again. He's had some issues with, I think, hamstring and groin, which dogged him last season. But boy, did he look sharp in that game against Chelsea. And if they keep him fit, and if they add, City might not have the bad season that quite a lot of us, including myself, thought they were going to have.
Now, also, last year, everybody kind of saw that Vincent Kompany, Yaya Toure, you know, had the birthday cake thing, and, you know, everybody thought he was upset because nobody gave him a birthday cake. Yep. But the fact is, both of them did not play to the level they had the year before, and, boy, they so far look like these guys have an appetite, are hungry, and are really desirous to win a title again.
Well, you're absolutely correct, and look, as a former midfielder myself, it's, you know, the prospect of facing somebody week in, week out like Yaya Toure and the prospect of trying to cope with the power and ability and agility that he has would be a frightening prospect. And it's almost unplayable when he has his mindset absolutely right on. Like you did mention there was one or two sort of side issues that were silly, really silly last season, but seemed to take a little bit of focus away. And there was talk in the summer, Glenn, that Yaya Toure was going to go to Inter Milan and rejoin his old manager, Roberto Mancini. So his head was probably turned a little bit. The transfer doesn't seem as if it's going to happen. The window's not closed yet, but it doesn't seem it's going to happen. So he seems as if he's settled. And Kompany's had a pretty poor 18 months by his standards. Now, these were high standards that he set, as you know, but he was a little bit, you know, inconsistent last season. But in his defence, I think they've struggled to really find a consistent top-quality partner to go beside him. And, you know, Mangala played well at the weekend, and there is talk they're going to sign Otamendi from Valencia, so he may get his wish. But yeah, both those players you mentioned have started the season very, very well.
All right, let's talk about Manchester United. They get a 1-0 win over Aston Villa. The Manchester United fans giving Wayne Rooney a bit of stick, but then today they beat Bruges 3-1 after going down a goal, two goals from Memphis. So I guess Manchester United on the upswing right now.
Yeah, and it's nice to see Louis van Gaal doing what managers should do, and that's play players in the correct position. I mean, he played Memphis in the first game, Memphis Depay, alongside Wayne Rooney. Now, this guy was brought in from Holland as a sort of wide player that liked to cut in from the left. He had lots of pace, and that's where we saw him tonight. We saw him there against Aston Villa as well, and he's much more productive in that department. He got a couple of lovely goals. He should have had a hat-trick, mister. A pretty easy one. But I think United's a real conundrum, Glenn. We're still yet to see how strong they really are. The competition they've faced so far hasn't been great. They've got the job done. But I think there's still more questions than answers. Daley Blind, as a left-sided centre-back, I believe will get found out when they play a better class of opponent. And, of course, Bastian Schweinsteiger, who's had such a great career, seems to be coming off the bench at the moment. Whether he's 100% fit, I'm not really sure. So I do still think for Van Gaal and United fans, there's probably still more questions than answers waiting to see what's going to progress this season.
And do you feel the same way about Liverpool, despite the fact that they've gotten two
results? You know, I absolutely do, Glenn. And I said on our ESPN FC show after the win against Bournemouth, they sort of mirror image United for me. It's been a good win and good start in terms of points, but I think they've yet to convince. But that the bottom line for any player, as you know, it's much easier to go into training where bouncing your step, looking forward to the next game, when you've not played particularly well but won, rather than not played particularly well and been absolutely battered. So it's a much better scenario to have as a Liverpool player. You can go in and you can work on the things that you didn't do so well. You can pick up on the good points that you've got 6 points. But I really think, like United, it's a big question mark into just how far this Liverpool team will go this season. I think it'll be a battle for fifth, if I'm being honest with you, but you know, Liverpool fans may disagree.
I'm going to give the hard luck award to Bournemouth because I thought they played some great stuff against Liverpool. I love this whole story. 11,000-seat stadium at home. Boy, they've had some pretty rough luck the last two weekends.
Yeah, and we sort of brought this up in our show, and you know, I said, "What? Where's the romance?" And the guys were saying, "You should be the last person talking about romances." the way you do your job is a grumpy Scot. But I love this story. You know, they've came up. You know, whether they stay up or not, I don't think is the end of the world for Bournemouth. I think just being here, being in the Premier League, going to Old Trafford and Anfield and the Emirates and all these stadiums, it's a great experience for these players and this young manager. A small town club that almost went out of business, a few years ago. They almost closed the doors and burnt the place down. They owed so much money. And all of a sudden, they're in the Premier League. It's a wonderful story. They're going to struggle to score goals. That was evident in the game against Liverpool. But what I would say to Bournemouth, anybody that supports Bournemouth or the other players, just enjoy it while you can and see where it takes you.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess because they are such a Cinderella story, people were hoping they would get a goal, take something out of that confidence-wise. I mean, they've played some very attractive soccer at times as well.
They have, and I don't think they'll change. And I'm not biased against any club, but I do hope, I just wish they could stay up. I hope they can stay up this year because I think it would be a great fillet and a carrot to be dangled to other clubs around the country to say you can get to this Premier League and you can stay up and you don't have to spend hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to achieve that. And I think that would be a great message that's going to be sent out. But I can tell you, having been down that side of the table in my time at Derby County back in the late 90s, early 2000s, it is a hard graft, Glenn, week in, week out, when you're constantly fighting against dropping into that bottom three and when you're looking around at other results to see if you've moved up the table, if you've dropped down the table. It is so mentally tough on the players, and it is going to be a long season for them, that we know.
Boy, I mean, I would think every type of emotion comes out. You're anxious, you're worried, you know, the pressure begins to build. It must be a pressure-filled experience.
Well, the enjoyment goes out of it, Glenn. Yeah. And we play, and as you know, you played the game. You try and play for the enjoyment. You want to go out there with your chest out and be positive, but the negative thoughts sort of do come in. And for the guys that are operating at the wrong end of any league table around the world, I know, and US soccer and Major League Soccer, there is no promotion relegation, and that is an issue and a constant debate that people are having. But for the rest of the leagues around the world, they have got this issue, and for the guys that are fighting down the bottom, I can tell you it's tough. It is really, really tough.
Craig, how about Liverpool and Arsenal? We're going to find out if we got imposters here or if we got the real deal when these two meet, because this is a pretty pressure-filled game in week three, Liverpool and Arsenal.
Oh, absolutely. And I think a couple of my colleagues were saying, well, wow, it's a shame we had the Chelsea-Man City game so early, but why not? Get it out there. It's okay. See what the guys are all about. Arsenal's a great one, Glenn. It's either a great high or a great low. And when they lost to West Ham on the first day, it was almost the sort of end of the world again. And then they beat Crystal Palace and everything's rosy. I think it's somewhere in the middle. I hope Arsenal are competitive this year all the way to the end. Certainly, Chelsea need people to be challenging them. But we are going to find out over the course of the season if Wenger is right to only add to his squad in a small way in terms of Petr Cech, and whether he has a strong enough and deep enough squad to go all the way coping with the Champions League as well. But I certainly think Arsenal are going to give themselves a much better chance this year. I'm not so convinced about Liverpool, I'm afraid, mate.
Norwich City beat Sunderland, Leicester over West Ham. These are all great stories. You also got a result for Swansea. Any of those three teams, Leicester, Norwich, Swansea, any of those jump out to you as something interesting and special at this point?
Well, I don't mind eating a bit of humble pie, but I did say at the start a couple of weeks ago that I don't think Claudio Ranieri would last the season at Leicester. Now, he started brilliantly, so at the moment things are going swimmingly for him there, and good luck to him in his second spell back in England. I think it will be hard to keep that going. Norwich, I think, will have a tough season, but Gary Monk at Swansea is a young guy who was never, he's a manager there now, the head coach, whatever you want to call it. For people that don't know, he was never a high-level player, played most of his career down the lower divisions, got an opportunity to manage them. So they had some good credentials, finished the highest they ever finished last year in eighth position, has gone out and strengthened in the summer. They have bought some players in. They look as exciting as ever, and they are potentially going to be a great story. But, you know, a great story. We've been busting into the top four, and we know to do that, it is going to take millions and millions of pounds, and Swansea just don't have that.
Now, you just brought something up interesting. You mentioned he was a lower-level player. Is it essential to play at a high level to be a good manager? Because there's a number of those, including Mourinho, who've really kind of bucked that sort of statement.
No, absolutely not. And there's an opportunity for all guys of all levels of soccer to go and continue and take their coaching badges and learn and go in to be good managers. Look, Sir Alex Ferguson, the greatest manager in the United Kingdom has ever seen, was never, you know, he played for Glasgow Rangers and had a decent career, but he didn't have an outstanding career. Arsene Wenger hardly kicked a ball in his youth. He wasn't a fantastic player. Mourinho, as you mentioned, I think was an interpreter at Barcelona point. The list goes on and the list goes on. Brendan Rodgers himself had a fledgling career before he got injured. And Roberto Martinez played in the lower, his manager at Everton, played in the lower leagues in England and played for Motherwell in Scotland. So you absolutely don't have to be Messi, Ronaldo, or a famous player, wherever. You don't have to be to be a good manager, because once you become a manager, you're judged solely on the results you get. You're not judged in what you did in a playing career. And that's the bottom line.
Well, listen, Craig, as always, great insight. Enjoy it. Thank you very much for coming on again. That was a great quick rundown of the Premier League, getting your thoughts. Thank you very much for coming on the show tonight and helping us end it in style.
No problem, Glenn. Cheers.
All right. He's the one and only Craig Burley, former Scottish international, played in both Scotland and England. You can see him and catch him on ESPN FC. Always good to get his opinion. We will call it a night here. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. Producer Michael Carroll. I'm Glenn Davis. It's Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Facebook, Soccer Matters. Good night.
ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.